iPadre episode number 288.
Father Jay Finelli is a priest of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Providence, Rhode Island. He's been bringing his special mix of interviews, information, and inspiration to earbuds around the globe since September of 2005. Now, with today's podcast, here's Father Jay, the iPadre.
Hi, everybody. My name is Father Jay Finelli. I am the iPadre, and thank you for joining me. I want to welcome all of our continued listeners and all of our new listeners, those of you who received some kind of device, maybe an iPad, an iPod, an iPhone, or an Android, or something that you're listening to this on. Thank you for being here. It's great to have you. Well, today we have a really great show in store for you. Today we're going to talk about a wonderful woman, Elizabeth de Sieur. And we're going to talk about her extraordinary faith. We'll also have another Mary moment. Sarah Reinhardt is here with us. I have a little short chat with one of the founders of the Walk for Life from the West Coast, and a little bit of feedback. And finally, we're going to announce the winners of the Greatest Miracle DVD. But before that, here's Thank You for Bringing Me Home by Phil Ayob. I hope I said that right. Courtesy MusicAlley.com. Well, let's go over and check out our feedback. Well, I have a few here that requested to be putting in the drawing for the Greatest Miracle DVD, and with their Christmas traditions, I'd like to share a few of those. Let's see, here we go. This one is from Diane, and she writes, "My favorite family Christmas tradition is reading out of the Bible the Christmas story just prior to our family opening our Christmas gifts. Secondly, is gathering around the piano and singing the old Christmas carols. Top favorite is O Holy Night. May God bless you and your family. I'm praying for you always. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Respectfully, Diane R. Zatcher." I hope I said that right, too. Here is another one. Let's see. "My favorite Christmas traditions are midnight mass and eating tamales and menudo on Christmas Day. Thank you for all you do. Sincerely, Joe." And let's see what we have here. Whoops. Let's see if I get to it. Okay. "My favorite Christmas ritual is to go to Vespers on Christmas Eve at Taos Pueblo, an ancient Native American pueblo in the town I grew up in. Huge bonfires are built all around the plaza, and a statue of Our Blessed Mother is carried on a dais after midnight, after Mass in San Geronimo Chapel. Around the bonfire is preceded by Pueblo men firing rifles into the sky, announcing their arrival. It is a stunning and memorable ceremony. Please remember me, and especially my daughter, who is beginning to discern life as a religious, in your prayers. She is attending Thomas Aquinas College in Santa Paula, California, graduating this May, and will be going on retreat to Ann Arbor, Michigan in February, a Dominican order, I believe. Blessings to you, Father Jay, and I pray your father continues to recover well. Thanks, Sylvia Grincher." Well, thank you all for that great feedback. And I have another one here, an audio one. "It's great to hear your traditions." Actually, I have another one here from Eric. And he says, "I'm sorry, but I don't have any besides going to Mass, of course, and visiting my family. We lay presents around under the Christmas tree like anybody else. Nothing special." But that is special. Going to Mass and celebrating with family, that is a very special thing. But here is another one from Eric, and he has a question.
"Hi, Father Jay. This is Eric from Belgium.
Hi, Eric.
I first want to wish you a very happy new year and a very good health for you and your family and for Mickey, of course. And I have a small question regarding the Focolare. I don't know if you know that organization. I wanted to know if it's recognized by the Pope and by the Vatican, or if it's more like a sect. Thanks a lot for the information. Bye. Bless you."
Well, thank you, Eric, for that. I had heard of the Focolare movement before, but I really didn't know anything about it. So I said, let me do some research. And actually, there is something listed on EWTN's website. I'll just give you a brief synopsis, but it is a good Catholic group. Their official name is Work of Mary. They were established in 1943 at the beginning of the Second World War, where there was a lot of a climate of hatred and violence. And it was founded by a Chiara Lubich. She was a young elementary school teacher from the town of Trent, Italy, or Trento. That's where the Council of Trent took place, and that was her native city. And it gave her a thirst, and she enrolled in philosophy classes and faculty in Venice University. And there she discovered God is the only ideal which endures when everything else fails. And her whole philosophy was God is love, and we're all called to live that commandment of love to one another and to those around us in the world, to try to spread that love and unity in the midst of the hatred of the world. Now, on June 29th, 1990, the Pontifical Council for the Laity decreed recognition of the Work of Mary, the Focolare movement, as an international association of the faithful of pontifical right. So it is a movement within and blessed by the Catholic Church. So you can find more about that. Just do a little search on the internet for Focolare, and all kinds of their websites and all kinds of things will come up. Pictures of them with Pope John Paul, of course, Blessed John Paul, and with also Pope Benedict XVI. So make sure you go over and check that on out. Before we go on to the topic of the day, here is our good friend Sarah Reinhard with a Mary moment.
Hey Elizabeth, what time is it?
It's time for a Mary moment.
We got the call on a country road. It was just another Sunday, the last day of our Christmas break. We were going to do this or that, you know, watch football, clean up the house, bask, and prepare for the back to normal that was sure to come. But January 3rd would never be just another Sunday to us ever again. Normal will forever be different. Through the day, from holding my mother-in-law to swallowing my tears and sneaking them out over tea and in the bathroom and under my arm, to holding my mother-in-law some more, to pulling out all my type A stops and hiding behind lists and planning, one prayer kept running through my mind. Mary, be a mother to us now. My sister-in-law is, hands down, one of the strongest, most courageous, most inspirational people I know. My mother-in-law is neck and neck with her. Hearing the news that my brother-in-law collapsed had me on the edge of the car seat. The call less than 10 minutes later that he had been declared dead was devastating. And I'm just a sister-in-law in Ohio. We gathered at my mother-in-law's house. It seemed like the natural thing to do. In the face of tragedy and loss, we went to the flame, to the source of the love, to the one who needed us and who we needed. Just as the wise men traveled on that epiphany many years ago, following a star in the sky, we went to my mother-in-law. Her first words crushed me. They continue to crush me. They strike my heart and tear me apart. Aren't mothers supposed to make everything better? She sobbed. I can't help her. I prayed to Saint Joseph, and that was 3 years ago. It's amazing how time passes, and yet how epiphany keeps coming. In Mary's lap, where I so often lay my head, I find the comfort of time. May you, too, find comfort in Mary this epiphany.
Well, thank you, Sarah, for another beautiful Mary moment. She wrote to me and said, you know, Father, do you want me to re-record this? Because you can hear my children in the background and you can hear some of my tears. But you know what? That's what makes a podcast different. We're not about everything being perfect. Of course, we want to do our best. But at the same time, it's really human, and Sarah's emotional response there to the loss in her family, I think, is very moving to all of us. So thank you so much, Sarah, for sharing from your heart. And now for the topic of the day. Well, the story that I'm going to share with you today is about a Dr. Felix and Elizabeth Lesueur. It's a very moving story, kind of like Sarah's, you know, very emotional. I used it in my homily on the solemnity of Mary, the Mother of God, and thought their story would really touch you. So I want to share it with you. You know, in our own lives, how many of us suffer because we have relatives or friends who have no faith? Abandon the church or claim to be atheist, live very immoral lives, who have just abandoned all kinds of morality. Their life is not the life of God as we would like to see them live. And even people I know, they have grandchildren that have never been baptized because their children that they raised within the Catholic Church no longer, for one reason or other, even practice their Catholic faith. We all have those people in our life, and I think this story is very moving to show us that we're not alone, that there is hope. And first, I'd like to begin this story by talking about Pauline Elizabeth Arrighi. She was born on October 16, 1866 in Paris. She was raised by a good Catholic family, a well-to-do family, and they liked the high life. They lived in the high life. They were well-known people in Paris. And she was set to marry Félix Le Sieur. Félix also came from a very well-to-do, a good Catholic family. They were both bourgeois families. Before marrying, Elizabeth discovered that Félix had lost his faith in medical school. He became a virulent atheist, published anti-clerical magazine, an atheistic magazine that really attacked the church. He promised, though, that he wouldn't interfere in her faith before they married, and finally on July 31st of 1899, they were married. They tied the knot. They became husband and wife. But you know what? Those promises that are made before marriage sometimes don't last. We know how those go. You know, we're all exuberant. We're not going to interfere with one another's faith. We're going to support one another's faith. But that promise soon after they married failed. Félix, now Dr. Félix Le Sieur, and his friends would gather together, and with her in their presence, they would begin to belittle her faith, try to eat away at her faith. Finally, he gave her a book that he thought would destroy her faith. It really had the opposite effect. Elizabeth read that book with great zeal, but it only strengthened her faith and her resolve to become a more faithful Catholic. You know, she used to like to party and live the high life, but that began to change her completely. She wanted to be what it meant to be Catholic. Now, As she did this, all she desired was for Félix to live his Catholic faith. She couldn't imagine being in heaven without him. She would cry thinking about it. She would be so sad, she said, if she was in heaven without Félix, even her heaven would be sad. So one day she made a bargain with God that she would take any suffering that he would give to her in exchange for his soul. It wasn't too long after that, I think maybe 2 years after that, 1905, she came down with breast cancer, and she had severe suffering. She once wrote to a religious sister that she became very close to. She said that he wrote these words: "It was truly an annihilation, and the suffering left no room for a thought, a prayer. Everything was stripped away. That is how I received communion. He then bore everything, for I offered only my suffering." We all know what that's like when we're suffering, when we're going through difficulty, and we're distracted because of our suffering. Sometimes we can't even pray. But imagine this woman going through this severe illness of breast cancer, especially back in 1905. It wasn't like the medical treatment we have today. She suffered tremendously. You know, the Lord heard her prayer. He answered her bargain. You have to watch out, you know, when you offer something like this to the Lord. He might take you up on it, and then you'll have tremendous suffering, and you have to be able to bear that patiently, and you have to bear that lovingly, and you have to bear that for the love of God, and you don't want to become angry and reject your faith because you took that suffering on that you asked the Lord to give you. But she didn't. She didn't resent it. Her life became a living suffering, and we hear this in the Mass. Every time we go to the Mass, whether it's Sunday or weekdays, the priest says, "Pray, brethren, that my sacrifice and yours become acceptable to God the Father Almighty." See, at the Mass, we unite our lives with the perfect sacrifice of Jesus Christ, and he accepts them. So whatever we're suffering or whatever we're going through in our lives, we offer that in union with the Lord, and that's our offering at the Mass. The Lady offers that at the Mass in union with a priest who offers the sacrifice of Christ, offers Christ himself in persona Christi to the Father. And as she was dying, Elizabeth one day said to Félix, "I shall die before you. And when I am dead, you will be converted. And when you are converted, you will become a religious. You will be Father Le Sieur." Well, He responded to Elizabeth. He said, "Elizabeth, you know my sentiments. I have sworn hatred of God. I shall live in the hatred and I shall die in it." Imagine that. He said, "I have sworn hatred to God." I wonder what happened in his life that he turned away from God. "I have sworn hatred to God. I shall live in the hatred and I shall die in it." What a horrible thought. To live in hatred and to die in hatred, especially against God. But she repeated her words and she died in his arms. She died on May 3rd, 1914. He considered her words those of a pious woman and intended to continue his hatred and his attacks against the Catholic Church and against Jesus Christ. And there was nothing that was going to convince him otherwise. He loved his wife, but, you know, she was just a pious fool for living this pipe dream, some kind of fable of God. But shortly after she died, he found her journal and a note that he left for her. She left for him in that journal. And she wrote this to Felix. "In 1905, I asked Almighty God to send me sufficient sufferings to purchase your soul. On the day that I die, the price will have been paid. Greater love than this no woman has than she who laid down her life for her husband." Imagine how heroic that woman was to think of it. Her husband was an atheist. He was attacking Christ in the church. He might have gone to hell, but she offered her life to the Lord, to take any suffering on to purchase his soul. And God accepted this bargain. But even after reading this, he refused to accept it, and he wrote them off again. He said, you know, this is religious fanaticism. But he kept reading her journal to see her hidden life, her life of sacrifice. He saw the depth of who this woman really was. He decided to take a trip to Lourdes. He had gone there with Elizabeth when she was alive, and he looked at the poor suffering people, and he said, what a pity that they would carry them all the way over here and let them suffer to bring them to this godforsaken place, you know. But he went to Lourdes to discredit it, and he was going to write a book about Lourdes. And when he arrived in Lourdes, if you've ever been to Lourdes, I've been there twice, and you have the beautiful basilica with the outstretched arms that go around. It's actually the staircase that goes up to the upper basilica. And it's like outstretched arms, like the arms of Our Lady, ready to embrace the world. But further out in that courtyard, there's a statue of Our Lady of Lourdes facing the basilica. And when he walked through that courtyard, he saw the statue and he, for some reason, looked up at the face of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And immediately, instantaneously, he had a conversion. And at that moment, all of his questions in life were answered. He never had a question again. He had never had a doubt of the Catholic faith again or our Lord Jesus Christ. He had that gift of grace that God gives sometimes to chosen souls, an immediate and instantaneous conversion to the Catholic faith. His life was changed forever. Now, by then, it was World War II. His story was getting around. He was a famous doctor, Dr. Felix Lisieux. Pope Benedict XV had heard about his conversion, and he sent for Dr. Lisieux. Dr. Lisieux went to see the Pope with this Father Vinia, and Felix recounted his conversion story to the Holy Father and said that he wanted to become a Dominican priest. Now, immediately, Pope Benedict XV said to him, "I forbid you. You must remain in the world and repair the harm which you have done." Now, picture this. This man ran a magazine that was communist, attacking the Catholic faith, attacking the church, and trying to destroy the faith of many people. And I'm sure he succeeded in it in many ways. So the Pope was really against him becoming a priest, entering religious life. So basically he was saying, you have to remain in the world. You have to live a life of penance and make up for all the evil that you've done. So this Father Vinia and the Pope spoke privately in a conversation for a few moments. And then the Holy Father said to this Dr. Lisieux, "I revoke my decision. Whatever Father Vinia tells you to do, you may do." Well, Felix entered the Dominicans in 1919. He was ordained a priest in 1923 at the age of 62, and he spent the next 27 years of his life preaching the Catholic faith and spreading the heroic story of his wife, Elizabeth. He was responsible for the start of her cause of canonization. How awesome that is when you think of that. That a faithful woman, they were married for 25 years. He didn't convert during her lifetime, but her work throughout her life, 25 years of putting up with ridicule and suffering for a man who had no faith, who was an atheist, who rejected her love for the Lord and for his church. But after she died, he received the grace of conversion. How wonderful is that? So he spent his life spreading this heroic story and working on the beginning of her cause for canonization. I think it was in 1923 that he helped that cause begin. In 1924, Bishop, now Venerable Fulton J. Sheen, attended a retreat directed by Father Lesueur, and many times after that he told this awesome story. Father Felix Lesueur died in 1950. So after that, he had a changed life. Can you imagine? He was married for 25 years, spent the next 27 years of his life after his conversion living the Catholic faith as a priest. To see that grace that God gave, but he didn't only give a grace, he gave that grace through the Blessed Virgin Mary. Why? Because Felix went to Lourdes intending to attack and destroy Lourdes as some kind of fable. But the grace of his conversion actually came through Our Lady. When you think of that, who has greater power in prayer? Women do. Women pray from the heart. They speak from the heart. And here we have the mother of the Son of God, who carried the Lord Jesus Christ in her womb for 9 months. What closer relationship is there between a child, a baby, an unborn baby, and their mother? Close to the beating heart, living within her own body, and then finally born. Now, we're still in the Christmas season, and we celebrated last week the solemnity of Mary, the Mother of God. A great solemnity, a great feast. Why? Because it defends, it protects the title of our Lord, who is God. He is God. So the title Mother of God lets us know very clearly that Jesus is not some adopted son. He was not just the son of Mary and God adopted him. He is the Son of God. He is God himself. And Mary is the Virgin Mother of God. Jesus chose his mother. So if you have someone that you love, someone that you know that is away from the church, away from Christ, turn to Our Lady. Keep entrusting them to her care. Consecrate them to Our Lady, and Our Lady will see to their conversion. You might not see it. Who knows? You might be like Elizabeth. You might not see it until after you leave this life, but Our Lady will be sure that they are safe in God's kingdom someday. It could be an instantaneous grace before they die. There was a story I remember of St. John Vianney, and a woman was very concerned because her husband threw himself off a bridge. And she said, "I'm so sad because my husband died after he killed himself." But St. John Vianney said, "No, he had an act of contrition, a deep sorrow between jumping off the bridge and hitting the bottom." And so we never know what God is going to do. And he'll do it through the hands of our Blessed Mother. This is a great story for each one of us. If you want more information, actually, I have a prayer asking the intercession of Elizabeth Lesueur, servant of God, and some more information about her cause of canonization. If you experience some kind of miracle through this prayer, you can send in your information, what has happened, a doctor's note or whatever, to her cause of canonization. If you have the iPadre app, you can download that. There's a PDF that will be attached to this show, and you can also download it from the show notes for today's show. And now we have our interview with one of the founders of the Walk for Life West Coast. Eva Montaigne. Eva was born in communist Budapest, and at the age of 9, she and her family escaped Budapest in the trunk of a car and ended up in America. Eva's lived in Texas, Indiana, and now she lives in San Jose, California, before finally moving to San Francisco. She has an aviation degree and is a pilot, as well as having worked in commercial real estate. And after a reversion, Eva now lives in San Francisco and works for Ignatius Press in marketing. And so it's my great joy to welcome Eva Montaigne to the show. Well, welcome, Eva. It's great to have you on the iPadre podcast.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a blessing. So you're out in San Francisco?
That's correct. I've lived out here for the past 20 years. It'll be 20 years in September, and I love it. I feel like San Francisco is truly my destination, my destiny.
Uh-huh.
I think I will hopefully die here.
Uh-huh. Well,
and so I love my city so much that that's why we started the Walk for Life.
Well, that's wonderful. Tell me, what's the temperature out there today?
It's probably in the 60s.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful sunny day and probably maybe high 50s, low 60s. It's just, I love these crisp, clear and clear days when it's bright and sunny and chilly in the air. It's just great. It's wonderful. It's wonderful weather out
that's
here.
That's beautiful. Here it's bright. There are some clouds in the sky, but it's 36. So,
oh my gosh.
A little
okay,
cooler.
Okay, you've got much colder weather.
This year is the 40th anniversary of the tragic Supreme Court decision in Roe v. Wade and making abortion on demand the law of the land. And I've had the blessing of attending a few of the marches for life down in Washington. But that's a long journey for people from the West Coast. So you're one of the founding members of the Walk for Life of the West Coast. Can you tell us how and when did this happen?
Sure. In fact, then now that you bring up March for Life, it's kind of the beginning of the Walk for Life in the sense that myself and my co-chair, Dolores Meehan, we both had attended the March for Life in the year 2000, and we were so moved by the number of young people and just people in general and peaceful and joyful and energized for the pro-life movement that it kind of stuck with us. And then a few years later, we had the opportunity to organize a marriage rally when our mayor, Gavin Newsom, illegally allowed gay marriages. And so we decided to organize a walk for families. And that turned out to be so well that we decided that we need to keep going and keep energized and keep pushing the culture in the right way. So that's when we decided to go ahead and start the Walk for Life. Thought that since 3,000 miles away, they can do a beautiful march like that in the cold weather. We could certainly try to do something in San Francisco and see what happens. And it was a huge success. Even our first year, we had 7,500 people show up.
Wow.
The city was furious. They came out in fully against us. They even had a city resolution against us. And they had tried to have their own counter rally. They had about 3,000 people at theirs, and it was an incredibly tense first year. But since then, it's been basically just us. The city kind of gave up, and we've grown every year. And this last year, we had about 40,000 people, and we're looking to have more this year.
How wonderful. So what is this, the 9th year or 10th year you're doing this?
This is the 9th. This will be our 9th year. Uh-huh, 9th annual. And we always do it on the Saturday closest to Roe v. Wade. And so this year was not the Saturday closest, but we had to do it on the 26th because we have an ice rink that they put up in the plaza where we have the rally. So we have to wait the ice rink out.
Oh, okay. You have a very important guest there this year, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, Apostolic Nuncio to the United States. How awesome is that?
We are so so excited that he wanted to join us. What happened was he came out for our Archbishop's installation mass on October 4th last year, and we had the pleasure of meeting him at the dinner afterward. And we were talking, and he had shown such great interest in the Walk for Life that the diocese officially invited him to come and participate and just right before Christmas, we got the official notice that he has accepted and he's coming, and we're so excited, and we're hoping that he'll be able to give the papal blessing on everyone there and on the walk itself, and we're super excited.
Now, this year you also have a great new archbishop, Archbishop Cordiglione, and
yes.
He seems like an awesome man, so congratulations on that. I'm sure he'll be at the march.
Oh, he's been here for the last, 4 years. He's used to come up even when he was in San Diego.
Wow.
And then, of course, he came every year when he was in Oakland. And so this will be his first year joining us as our shepherd, and we're very excited to for the first time he's our official shepherd. He will definitely be saying the invocation and joining us. So it's very exciting.
What does the day hold in store? When does it start? Where does it go? And where does it end? And do you have any other functions around it?
Well, there are a lot of different functions around it that other people are organizing, and they're all listed on our website under event info. There's an Oakland walk the day before. There, the Sisters of Life are doing an event on the night before. So all those events that are around the walk are listed on our website.
Mm-hmm.
As for us, we start our rally at 12:30, but before our rally, Silent No More will have for about an hour, they'll have some testimonials, and we're very excited that Jennifer O'Neill decided that she's going to come out and give her testimony during that part of the day. I don't know if you know who Jennifer is, but she's been in lots of movies. She was the first supermodel, and she has an abortion story, and she'll be coming to share that with us at the program before our rally. And then our rally starts at 12:30. It goes for 1 hour, mm-hmm. and then we start walking at 1:30. And we start walking from Civic Center Plaza, which is right in front of City Hall there in the middle of San Francisco. And we walk down Market Street, which is the largest street down through the downtown San Francisco. And we end up at Justin Herman Plaza, which is right on the waterfront. It's a beautiful area by the Ferry Building. It's just a gorgeous area. So we end up there, and it's about a 2-mile walk right through the heart of San Francisco.
That sounds really awesome. If people want more information, they can go to walkforlifewc.com, and I'll have a link in today's show notes.
Great. Thank you so much for helping us promote it, and we encourage everyone to come out and join us, or if you can't come to San Francisco, try to go to your local events that are, I'm sure, happening this month. It's very important now to stay engaged and stay involved.
Well, that is awesome, Eva. We'll be praying for you, and I know we have a lot of listeners out by your way. So know that we'll be, if we're not there, we'll be in union with you, praying together for this such important time in the life of our nation. So God bless you, and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for everything you're doing, and God bless you too.
Well, that was a nice little interview with Eva. I really enjoyed speaking with her. They're doing great work out west in San Francisco. And if you're out there and you happen to go to the Walk for Life, you want to do some recording, or if you go to the March for Life in Washington, D.C., do some recording and share it with us on the podcast. I'd really love to hear that. And now I'd like to share with you the winners of the copies of The Greatest Miracle. What I did was, actually, last week, when I recorded, I actually drew one early, and then I realized that it was too early, so we have three winners rather than two. One is already on the way, and I'm waiting for some addresses to send out the others. One was Diane Zatcher, the other one was Sylvia Greichner, and Joe Cordova. So congratulations to all of you, and your copy of The Greatest Miracle will be coming to you shortly. Well, we're at the end of another episode of the iPadre Catholic Podcast. I hope you enjoyed yourself. If you have some feedback, please call our feedback line. It's been a long time that we don't get much feedback lately. I don't know what's happening. I've decided what I'm going to do in the new year. I've been doing a lot of interviews, and I'm going to really cut back on that. I want to get back to more of our original format. I want to do more on Catholic topics. I want to answer more of your questions. So please send in your feedback if you have some. Call our feedback line, 267-317-2373, or you can email us. But if you want regular updates of what I'm up to, you can visit my Facebook page at facebook.com/FatherJFinelli, all spelled out. My other Facebook page, I'm not accepting new friends because it just became overwhelming, and now I really don't have a place that I can actually communicate to my personal family and friends. So I'm trying to make that that page eventually. But if you go to the other, if you go over to Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/iPadre. It's been great spending this time with you. I look forward to next time. And until then, God love you.
You've been listening to the iPadre Catholic Podcast with Father Jay Finelli. For show notes and more information, visit iPadre.net. That's iPadre.net. Want to get in touch with Father Jay? Call the feedback line at 267-31-PADRE. That's 267-317-2373. Or email cast@iPadre.net. That's cast@iPadre.net.
This production is affiliated with SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.